Welcome to the CRE Exchange Podcast, where we deep dive into the global trends and challenges of CRE professionals across all sectors of the commercial real estate industry. We engage with experts in the space to bring you innovative insights into industry practices, opportunities, and challenges to better inform your decisions. This episode is brought to you by Altus Group, a global leader in asset and fund intelligence for commercial real estate.
Welcome, everyone, to another exciting episode of CRE Exchange. I'm Cole Perry, your host and Associate Director of Research at Altus Group, a leading provider of asset and fund intelligence. I'm joined by Omar El-Tarai, our U.S. Director of Research. Together, we'll share the latest news and trends in the U.S. commercial real estate market. Omar, it's great to be with you. What do we got on our agenda today?
Yeah, so we'll start off covering markets and the recent Fed rate decision, the release of their minutes, the press conference, and the release of their summary of economic projections. Then we'll touch on some of the macro highlights that came out over the last week, including retail sales, housing data, as well as a number of the surveys and indices coming out from some of the regional Federal Reserve banks. And then we'll shift to commercial real estate and share some of the highlights from the MBA or Mortgage Bankers Association's Q4 2024 report on outstanding commercial mortgages. And then we will also share some of our conference schedule that really kicks off and picks up over the next coming weeks.
All right, excellent. Well, how about we jump right in with some Fed rate talk?
All right. So the big event last week was the Fed rate decision and the release of their summary of economic projections on Wednesday, March 19th. The Federal Open Market Committee, or FOMC, maintained the target range for the federal funds rate at 4.25 to 4.5%, really where it's been since December of 2024. And this was, you know, kind of a non-event. It was very much expected by the market. So it was in line with the market's expectations going into the meeting. Their official statement noted that, quote, economic activity has continued to expand at a solid pace, unquote, while the statement also acknowledged that the uncertainty around the economic outlook has increased. In addition to the rate decision, the Fed announced that it would slow the pace of QT or quantitative tightening to ensure sufficient liquidity within the Treasury market. Specifically, the Fed will be reducing the monthly cap on U.S. Treasuries redemption to $5 billion per month from $25 billion starting in April. This really is a big reduction in the pace of their balance sheet reduction. So that's, I know that's tricky. I said reduction twice there, but the Fed is essentially slowing down how quickly they're shrinking their balance sheet. And to think about what this actually means in kind of market terms, by reducing the monthly redemption cap from $25 billion to $5 billion, they're really allowing fewer Treasury securities to mature without being replaced each month on their balance sheet. This decision to hold rates steady was unanimous amongst the FOMC members, but the FOMC member Christopher Waller did dissent regarding the pace and change to quantitative tightening. But possibly more interesting than the continuation of the wait and see, or really holding rates steady for the time being, was the release of the quarterly summary of economic projections. This is added disclosure by the Fed that comes four times a year, and it shows the FOMC members' outlooks for key economic variables over the current and coming years. I think what was notable about this SEP, or Summary of Economic Projections, was first that they'd shifted down their expectations for GDP growth, or real GDP growth, through 2025. They moved it down to 1.7%. This is down from the 2.1% that was in their December SEP numbers for 2025. The SEP also showed that core PCE is expected to be 2.75 for 2025. This is up from the 2.5% in December. And then also unemployment was minorly changed, but effectively unchanged at 4.4% for 2025. This was 10 basis points or 0.1% higher than the December rate, but they're not expecting a rapid rise in unemployment. So despite these changes, the Fed is still expecting to cut two more times. And the median projection for the Fed funds rate remained unchanged at 3.9% for year end 2025. So we've touched on the statement, the major policy changes. Then there was also the press conference. So during the press conference, Fed Chair Jerome Powell acknowledged that a good part of the higher inflation forecast is really related to tariff and trade policy that's been implemented by the Trump administration. And Chair Powell noted that while many non-Fed economists and market investors have generally raised their estimated likelihood of a recession for the coming year, the FOMC and the Fed does not really think that a severe downturn is likely. Powell brought back the transitory word when he was talking about inflation, and he noted that tariffs will likely delay the progress on bringing inflation in check in the near term, but that the impacts from the trade policy and ultimately tariffs are really going to be transitory and will work their way through the economy somewhat quickly. So I know this is monetary policy, which is not quite CRE, but to bring it back to CRE, I think that the takeaways from the Wednesday release of the materials, the rate decision and changes to the balance sheet policy, but also the shift in the outlook for the year ahead, I would say it really comes down to three main things. Debt financing is likely going to remain elevated, at least if these projections come to fruition. It's unlikely that there'll be rapid cuts. So the first is kind of we're still in this higher for longer. The growth outlook being downgraded could be a potential headwind for commercial real estate fundamentals, particularly for sectors that are more sensitive to economic growth. Historically, that's been office and retail. And then inflation is still very much on the table and is still an issue. You know, part of this has to do with tariffs, which hopefully the Fed's right this time about how and is applying the word transitory correctly there. If we're in this slower growth, still sticky and high inflation environment, this could ultimately squeeze some NOI margins further. Even though I do think that the rate path, the growth outlook, and inflation were the three main takeaways from Wednesday, the shift in quantitative tightening could potentially impact the Treasury market, which then could impact the borrowing costs for commercial real estate. But I think that that one is at least once more removed. I know that we had a big week for macro releases outside of the Fed's rate decision and meeting materials release. Cole, what were you paying attention to last week?
One of the first ones that we got last week was the retail sales figures. I think a lot of people are watching this more closely than they normally would because they expect that folks are pulling forward purchases, maybe in anticipation of prices going up due to tariffs. But I'm not sure that this is totally reflected within the data. So it was interesting. This came out on the 17th. It showed that sales rose 0.2% on the month and 3.1% on the year to $722 billion. That's seasonally adjusted annual level. So if you were to exclude food from that, retail sales were up 0.5% on the month and up 3.4% on the year. We know that consumer spending remains pretty strong. I think this is really supported by low unemployment, steady job growth, rising incomes. A lot of things that you mentioned were mentioned in the FOMC's release. But the sector-specific landscape in this data is really interesting, showing some early signs of softening consumer spending. On the other hand, other sectors are up quite a bit. So non-store retail, for example, super important indicator for logistics and warehouse demand, because that's mostly online retailers, was growing at a 6.5% annual rate, but that's been slowing virtually every month since mid-2023. Grocery stores, on the other hand, previously had kind of stagnated. Their growth has been accelerating. So now in February, 5% year over year. Furniture stores have rebounded quite sharply from deep 10 to 15% contractions annually to a 4.5% annual increase. But you have to put your calculus hat on to know it's not all stickers and roses and jelly beans for that sector. So the other thing I want to mention here is that the figures are not inflation adjusted. And so when you look at some of the sectors that are at or below 3%, they could actually be declining in real terms. So a lot of sectors, building materials, for example, could be negative in real terms. For some of the real estate intense retail sectors, I think there's some interesting signs there. I think owners and investors of retail CRE really need to be paying attention to these. But I know there were some other releases. Omar, why don't you tell us about manufacturing indexes?
Sure. So we got two index releases from and survey results from the New York and Philly Fed last week. Both of their surveys really measure business activity among manufacturers in both of their regions, one being a New York State focused and then the other being the Philly Fed's designated region, which covers Eastern PA, Southern New Jersey, and Delaware. These surveys are monthly and they cover manufacturing activity, which ultimately influences directly industrial real estate demand, particularly for warehouse distribution and production facilities. So the first of the two surveys that came out last week was the Empire State Manufacturing Survey. So this is New York. It came out on the 17th, and the index plunged to minus 20 level in March. This is from a positive 5.7 level in February. This represents the largest drop since May of 2023. The survey really revealed significant declines in new orders and shipments, with input prices increasing at the fastest pace in more than 2 years. Inventory levels increased to their highest level in over 2 years, indicating potential oversupply concerns. If you try to break this down and interpret what this might mean for CRE, the manufacturing contraction is a signal of potential weakness in industrial space demand, particularly for the Northeast, and could potentially indicate a broader economic slowdown that could affect other property types and property sectors, notably, retail. So if that was coming from the Empire State Manufacturing Survey, there was also the Philly Fed Index that came out on the 20th. As I noted, this covers Eastern PA, Southern New Jersey, and Delaware. The index read was 12.5 in March. This is down from 18.1 in February. Again, this indicates some slowing growth in manufacturing activity through the Philly Fed's district. The survey's future indicators, because they're also asking kind of the manufacturing leaders, what their plans are, these future indicators showed a significant drop, with future general activity falling 22 points to 5.6. This is the lowest reading since January of 2024. And for CRE investors and owners, you can interpret some of this data as being a sign of potential moderating demand for industrial properties within that covered Philly region or Philly Fed region. But there was a silver lining that there's still some positive reading overall that could be supportive of further expansion. This has to do kind of with the way that the index is set up. If I'm going to break it down to very simple finance terms, even though there is still some positivity and bullishness, that there's less positivity and less bullishness than months prior. I do think that this is really kind of like confirming and reflecting a softer positive outlook, or this kind of rise of some concern and uncertainty that we've seen pretty much across capital markets. A lot of the economic data, particularly the soft data, that is asking about future conditions. But overall, I would say that the Philly Fed and the Empire State Manufacturing Surveys were both down on the month and showing some signs of uncertainty. I know that some hard data that did come out last week had to do with housing. What were you seeing there?
Yeah, the housing data usually comes out all at once. So I've got a couple of releases that I wanted to talk about. And one, which came from the Census Bureau and the Department of Housing and Urban Development, They released their monthly new residential construction report. This came out on March 18th. And this was seen as a big positive. Housing starts actually rose 11.2% month over month, but they declined on the year to a seasonally adjusted annual rate of 1.5 million. So if you look at the longer term trend here, even though the month seemed good, this marked 6 months of consecutive annual decreases in starts. So I think what you're seeing here is that February's uptick is possibly due to some builders accelerating construction ahead of the proposed tariffs, which I think are slated to go into effect in early April. And one of these that's really important for the sector is the 40% tariff on Canadian lumber, particularly in the Midwest and Northeast. They're fairly concerned about builders in those regions. But if you look even further up the chain in terms of the construction pipeline for new housing, permits are showing a much bleaker picture. So they're an indicator of future construction. They actually fell 1.2% month over month and were down 6.8% on the year. Looking at the change from a year ago for multifamily, permits have declined in all but 1 month since March of 2023. This is a decline in the construction pipeline for multifamily that you would typically only see in recessionary periods. So this is a huge correction relative to this big run up in 2021 and 2022. Multifamily starts have also dropped 6.6% on the year. They've been on a downward trend for all but 2 months since June of 2023. So there is a significant contraction in the new housing pipeline. We compare this with one other data release from the National Association of Realtors. They released existing home sale data, or rather the sales of existing homes. The February data came out on March 20th, and they showed that sales of existing homes rose 4.2% on the month, but were down 1.2% on the year. Seasonal adjusted annual rate came in at 4.26 million. The release also has other supplementary pieces to it that they talk about. One is the median price of an existing home. They showed that median prices were up 3.8% on the year. The median price is now $398,000. They also released some inventory statistics. So inventory grew 5.1% month over month to 1.24 million units, equating to a 3.5-month supply. Now, NAR themselves admit that a balanced market is somewhere between 5 and 6 months. So this is still an extremely tight housing market. And the other thing I'll say too, and I dug through a lot of releases to pull this together, but NAR, Fannie Mae, the Mortgage Bankers Association, and the National Association of Home Builders, I think a couple other big banks, Wells Fargo being one of them, they all anticipate that the 30-year fixed rate mortgage is going to remain at or above 6% through 2026. So if you're expecting declining rates to help thaw out the market a little bit, we're going to have to wait and see. I think affordability issues are going to certainly persist in the for sale market. And when you pair this with the fact that there's a significant contraction in construction activity for both single and multifamily, these conditions, I think, are still going to push people towards rental options. And this is really going to support that apartment demand and presumably rent growth if affordability challenges persist in the for sale market. So a lot of interesting stuff there with home data, but I think some of the pricing indexes will come out later this month. I'll be interested to see what happens there.
Increasingly more so rooting for, you know, I think the housing market can only change if new supply comes on significantly, right? I mean, if any of these expectations are right, I think that you're spot on, right? This is going to remain super, super tight.
But you hear the problem there too, because construction lending rates are also way up. And so I think it's going to be challenging.
Not to mention if tariffs hit one of the key inputs for housing materials, and if, you know, the impact also on the labor side, right? So this I think this will remain to be a big issue through the year, but hopefully we can see some big changes come through that open up the supply pipeline.
I hope so. All right. What was your last release that you wanted to talk about from last week?
Yeah. So actually I'll touch on two other releases that I don't think we usually touch on this podcast, but the first is the Chicago Fed National Financial Conditions Index, which was released on March 19th. The index provides a comprehensive weekly update on U.S. financial conditions. So it spans money markets, debt and equity markets, and the traditional and banking channels, as well as the non-banking, or they've been dubbed the shadow banking system. The way that the index is really set up, so it boils a lot of these indicators down into a single index value, and positive values indicate that financial conditions are tighter than average, while negative values indicate looser than average conditions. So while the index is not CRE specific, the survey does shed light on overall financial conditions, borrowing costs, capital availability, and lending standards across capital markets. And so it is relevant to commercial real estate because commercial real estate is within the broader capital markets. Tighter conditions and higher values of the index typically mean more conservative underwriting, which means reduced transaction volumes, which means higher cap rates, which means lower values. So that's how you can kind of interpret it. But the key takeaways from the release on the 19th is that the NFCI, or National Financial Conditions Index, increased to a minus 0.55 reading for the week ending March 14th. The index components showed risk indicators contributed the most and contributed a minus 0.22 level, and then credit indicators contributed a minus 0.18 to the overall level, and the leverage indicators contributed a minus 0.14 to the overall level. Now, while still in the negative territory, right, which really indicates looser than average conditions, but the slight increase over the prior week suggests that there has been marginal tightening of financial conditions. And so for CRE investors, the release really indicates that financing remains relatively accessible, though the upward trend, if it continues, really could start making it much more challenging to get financing, both on the lending standard side, but then overall costs of financing. The second index that I want to highlight that, again, I don't think we often are highlighting on this podcast is the St. Louis Fed's Financial Stress Index. Again, this is a weekly index, and it takes many market measures, 18 data series, and compiles it into a single index value. So it's pulling interest rates, yield spreads, and volatility measures predominantly. If it's above zero, indicates above average financial stress. And if it's below zero, that indicates below average financial distress. The CRE angle, financial stress can impact investor sentiment, risk premiums, and ultimately capital flows into commercial real estate. So higher stress levels typically correlate with wider credit spreads for CRE loans, reduced transaction activity, and greater caution from lenders. So the reading from last week that came out on the 20th showed the index at a minus 0.22 read for the week ending the 14th. And while still negative, again, which indicates below average financial stress, the index has moved up significantly closer to zero compared to the readings that were coming out from late 2024. So this is really showing that financial market stress is increasing. I think we've called this out on a number of podcasts when we were just focusing on credit spreads. But for CRE investors, this trend confirms the growing uncertainty in financial markets that could lead to more conservative lending approaches, higher risk premiums, and potentially reduced capital flows into commercial real estate. I know that you dove through the Mortgage Bankers Association Q4 data release. What did you find there, Cole?
Yes, we'll dive even closer to CRE. And I'm not sure that we've covered this one on the show either, but after each quarter, the Mortgage Bankers Association, or MBA, puts out their quarterly mortgage debt outstanding report. And so the latest one covers the whole of 2024, focusing on Q4 2024. This came out on March 18th. The report compiles like a number of different data sets, some that you've already talked about, but You have the FDIC quarterly banking profile, the Fed's flow of funds data. They have some information from TREP, and then they have their own proprietary data sources. And so I think that this report gives us a little bit more color on CRE debt than what we might just see from public sources, because they're able to pair outstanding mortgages with origination data, maturity data, payoffs, delinquencies. You can get a full picture of mortgage flows. So I wanted to dig into a few of the numbers here, since I think what we try to do on the show is connect capital markets, and CRE. But what we saw in the report was that commercial and multifamily mortgage debt rose by $172 billion. That's 3.7% in 2024. And now it sits at $4.8 trillion. Multifamily mortgage debt, though, grew a bit faster than that. So 5.4% annually. And that was the 10th straight quarter that it has grown faster than commercial mortgage debt. So that sits at $2.16 trillion. So if you do the math, it's almost half of that outstanding figure. Banks hold the largest share of outstanding CRE mortgages, 38%, followed by agency portfolios, 22%, life insurers, 16%, and CMBS, which is around 13%. Now, the fastest growing sector, or fastest growing investor, rather, is life insurance companies. So they saw annual growth of 9.3%. They added $67 billion in commercial mortgages last year. Now, agency and GSE portfolios dominate multifamily, about 49%, so almost half. But they drove 56% of multifamily debt in 2024, so an even larger share. So if that pattern continues, they'll probably have a majority of outstanding multifamily. They also talked about in the report delinquency stats. So I'll run through some of these without boring folks with too many numbers. But in the fourth quarter of 24, CRE delinquency rates generally increased. Banks and thrifts reported a delinquency rate of 1.26%. That was 2 basis points up from quarter three. CMBS had the largest increase, so up 0.63% to 5.78. That's the highest among all the categories. Life insurance companies were the only group that actually saw delinquency rates decline, so down 0.03% or 3 basis points to 0.43%. So I think the overall takeaway here is that despite some recent increases, delinquency rates are still historically pretty low, even with a lot of the issues we know at the property sector level for office. Purported oversupply in multifamily, which we just talked about, might not be as big of a problem as we thought. But there are $1 trillion of commercial mortgages maturing in 2025, according to the report. So we're in this higher for longer interest rate environment. It's possible that this could lead to more delinquencies if they're going to face challenges refinancing in what's really assumed to be an upcoming uncertain economic environment. And with these high rates, it should be interesting.
Yeah, I'm curious to see, though, because one of the things that I've dove into but have not brought up on the podcast is the ability to modify and push out, right? And so I know that that's something that...
And we've been hearing about the maturity wall for years now, and it hasn't seemed to come yet.
Exactly. Reminds me of 10 years ago coming out of the GFC when that was, I would say, the last time that the maturity wall was often highlighted in research notes and everybody had an eye on it. And yet it was never quite a wave that was able to crest, which I think that's a good thing. But, you know, a lot of, I think a lot of lenders are able to either modify or just extend, but
extend and pretend.
Exactly. So we'll see how that goes. So it was a busy last week in terms of releases, but we also have a pretty packed schedule coming up. I know you're on the road this week and we got more conferences shortly after. Why don't you tell us where you are and what brings you there?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am on the road this week. So it was fitting that we talked about retail sales on today's episode. I'm in Las Vegas for Shop Talk. This is one of, if not the largest conferences focused on the future of retail. So it brings together thousands of attendees from some of the big retailers, emerging tech and media companies, investors in the sector to talk about how essentially commerce is evolving online and in store. Some of our listeners probably remember I attended Grocery Shop, which is the food and consumer packaged goods equivalent of this conference. I attended that back in October. So this is much larger, much more broad. So it's not just going to be an opportunity to see what's happening in retail, but I'm hoping a good window into consumer behavior, which is going to have ramifications for all kinds of commercial space, right? Retail, industrial, hospitality. So one of the super cool things about this conference is that they boast that something like 75,000 curated meetings occur over the course of 3 days. So I've got a lot scheduled with some interesting folks in the space. Hopefully we can bring a few onto the show. And I've got a lot of sessions I'm looking forward to attending focused on the macro environment. So a lot of unanswered questions, I think, swirling around about the strength of the consumer, the impact to the economy from things like tariffs. So I'm interested to see what some of the biggest names in retail have to say about this stuff. I think CRE is ultimately the platform where all these forces play out. That's why I love it. I think you would say the same. So looking forward to sharing some of the takeaways from the conference after it wraps up. I'm going to be sharing a lot on social media and articles here in the next few days. So look out for those. And Omar, I know we are both on the road again in 2 weeks. Do you want to tell us about that conference?
Yeah, so we'll be going to the American Real Estate Society, or ARES, 2025 annual conference in Tucson, Arizona. I'm looking forward to going for a number of reasons, but one is because we get to present some of the research that we've been doing. So you'll find Cole and myself on a stage presenting a paper on CRE market liquidity, as well as on a few other panel sessions throughout the event. We have a few releases this week that we're tuned in for. So on Tuesday, April 1st, S&P's final manufacturing PMI and construction spending, as well as JOLTS, or the job opening and labor turnover survey, will be released. On April 2nd, ADP employment and factory orders is coming out. On the 3rd, we have the U.S. trade deficit, as well as more PMI data. And then on Friday, April 4th, the March employment report will also be coming out.
Excellent. Well, sounds like we got a busy few weeks, and we'll be covering a lot. So, Omar, I think that's all the time we've got today. Before we sign off, did want to encourage listeners once again that if you like the show, we'd love it if you could rate it on Apple and Spotify. Leave us comments there as well. We will read them. Or feel free to just send us an email at altusresearch@altusgroup.com. We'd love to know what topics you'd like covered on the program. In the meantime, it's been a pleasure, and I look forward to speaking with you on another episode of CRE Exchange. Have a good one.
Thank you for listening to the CRE Exchange podcast, powered by Altus Group. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a 5-star review and be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. This episode is brought to you by Altus Group, a global leader in asset and fund intelligence for commercial real estate. At Altus, we bring together capabilities across technology, analytics, valuations, tax, and development advisory services. We are guided by bold thinking, integrity, and inclusivity, partnering with CRE professionals to maximize opportunities with exceptional service experience. Find out more at altusgroup.com.